Hi, and welcome to Michael's Office. This podcast hosts my unfiltered, unscripted, and genuine thoughts about things happening in the entertainment world today. For this week, I'm going to have a guest on, but first I'm going to have some movies to review. You can look at the full reviews on my letterbox, which I'll link in the description. And we'll just get to know them this week. So please, step into my office. So, let's get it over with. We're going to talk about some movies I watched, basically give mini reviews. As I said before, the full reviews will be on my letterbox, which I'll link in the description. So first, these are going to be quick little things because it's about full reviews on letterbox. Go to it. Follow me there. First movie is Booksmart, or first film is Booksmart. And this was a whole lot of fun. It was hilarious, for real. This was a hilarious comedy. It was a bit political. And I didn't mind it. I was a little annoyed. But it was like a little political. Just a little bit. And I don't mean like, it's just a little political when it's actually very political. It's just a little political. But I really enjoyed the comedy. I was laughing quite a lot. I had a big smile on my face. There was like two jokes in particular that I'm just closing my door. That I laughed extremely hard. I don't think I've laughed that hard in a long time. I literally rolled on the ground at one joke because it was so good. That was a hilarious joke. The car scene with Jason Sudeikis and Caitlin Dever and Beanie Feldstein was absolutely hilarious. And it had a nice ending. What's her name? Billie Lourd was a scene stealer. She did steal a show, but she was a scene stealer for sure. Jason Sudeikis was also really funny, despite the small role he had. Both Beanie Feldstein and Caitlin Dever did a really good job. And I'm sad that this film is not as watched as it should be. Or not as talked about as it should be. Another underrated film, The Art of Self-Defense, where it stars Jesse Eisenberg. He's the main character. And this was a dark comedy that I also feel like had some jokes go over my head because of how dark it is and how clever it is. But it was funny. Definitely my favorite performance that I've seen from Jesse Eisenberg. I still need to see The Social Network, so that's probably going to be a film I need to see soon. I need to see The Social Network. He looks like he did an amazing job in that. This film was brutal. It was shocking. It had a good mess. It had, I loved that it talked about toxic masculinity. It's not like when I used to think when people said toxic masculinity, it meant all masculinity is toxic. It meant like you can't have feelings, gotta be an alpha male, pain is awesome, women suck, like women are below men and stuff like that. Just that mentality, like seeing, like have an eye that they're alphas and they're betas and stuff along those lines. It's something that I'm glad they did that instead. I thought it was gonna be a goofy comedy, and it was at the beginning, but I'm glad I saw this film. I was actually kind of excited that this film was coming out, and I wanted to see it when it did. I'm glad that I did.
Next, I saw Jumanji 2. Or Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. Is that it? Or no, Jumanji, The Next Level. And this was a lot of fun. Like the Lego movie, the second Lego movie part two, or the second part or whatever. It's not as good as the first, but it's still really good. Jack Black is the MVP in this film. Danny DeVito, despite his short screen time, he does a really, really, really good job. Awkwafina, I watched a film with her as the lead, and I'm like, I knew something was special about her when I was like getting emotional, when she was getting emotional, and in this film, movie, I mean. And this movie was a whole bunch of fun. It was really funny. It added to the characters, and it basically said, hey, we're gonna go for a third movie, and I don't mind it. I'm pretty sure that's it. We set up for a third movie. Jumanji Next Level. Let me go to. I'm pretty sure it's set up for a sequel. I could be wrong. Let me go to Wikipedia. Yep, and there's a they're going for a third film, third movie, which I do not mind at all. I don't mind if they do this one last time. Yeah, super excited for it. And yeah, great movie, great movie. I hope you guys have seen it. If you haven't, go see it. You'll have a bunch of fun. And then we moved on to The Farewell. This time, that's what the film I was talking about with Awkwafina as the lead. And I do believe she deserved to be in a lot the awards conversation a lot more. I don't know who I don't think I would have put her in. She should have though. Let me check. Let's say we put Lupita and somebody else in. Possibly Cynthia Erivo. I don't like doing that, but you gotta. Let me check. 92nd Oscars. There we go. I mean, you'd have to replace Charlize Theron and Cynthia Erivo if you want to put Lupita and Awkwafina in there. But yeah, she did a really, really good job in this film. Really good job as Xuzhen Zhao or Zhao Xuzhen, did an amazing job. This was a very slow, calming, heartbreaking. I thought this movie would have some humor. It does not. It's just a very sad movie. And you broke my heart to watch, but I loved every second of it. I really love the film. I really love this film. I did. It's something that everybody can relate to, and it's just a very calming movie, and it's a sad movie, and it just shows the differences in cultures between the two. Between Awkwafina, American, the West and the East, and super interesting. It's a little slow. It didn't keep my interest at times, but I enjoyed it. I definitely still enjoyed it. After that, I watched I Still Believe, a film in 2020. And I really like this film. Film, movie, it could be. Yeah, I really like this film. It's made by the Irwin brothers, who are gonna basically being this are in my opinion the saving grace of the Christian film industry. And KJ Apa, if let's say the Oscars were today, he'd be up for a nomination. He wouldn't win. I still think that'd go to Ben Affleck, but he'd definitely be up for a nomination. And both of the leads had chemistry. Say that it's not believable that they fall in love that quick. I'm like, I don't know. I've known some Christians who go to my college who fall in love extremely quickly and get married very soon. It wasn't. It's a little preachy, but not as much as you think. It's got a really nice message. The cinematography is good. It's just sad. It's just sad the whole time. It's just sad. More sadness. Sadness and then sadness. It's just very sad. But it's got a good message. Just. And I again recommend you guys should watch it. It's just. I've been watching great films. And after that, I saw Just Mercy. Just Mercy was also very sad. It was pretty sad. But it also was heartwarming and it's. Kind of by the numbers, along with I Still Believe, but the both Michael B. Jordan gives a really good job, like a really good performance. I still think his best performance is it's between him as Creed and him in Creed, and then him in Black Panther. Both really, really good performances by him. But other than that, and then, oh my gosh, Jamie Foxx did a really, really good job. I understand why he had some awards buzz surrounding him. He was so calming chill, and you could tell that he was trying to calm, like when he was calming somebody who had PTSD, he did it well, and it was believable, and he was just provide this stillness, and that was it was really great, and just he provided the emotion and. Again, I cried because of sad things happening. I cried because of happy things happening. The film was kind of funny when it wanted to be. Like, when it wanted to be funny, like when it was joking, like making jokes at, like, certain situations. It wasn't, like, the film itself, but it was, like dialogue. Dialogue. Funny dialogue. The ending is predictable, but it's still a really great film, and it's. Something that needs to be watched. And then another film that's a lot more heartwarming was Peanut Butter Falcon, starring Shia LaBeouf. So Shia LaBeouf did a really good job along with Zach Gottsagen. They both seemed like they were friends in real life. And I before I go and do more, yeah, this was just a heartwarming film about friendship, family, and it treated. Going back to Zach Gottsagen, treated Zach Gottsagen with respect. It's treated the whole situation with respect. It just had a thing, like a poignant thing, where a poignant thing that Shia LaBeouf's character says, Tyler, I think it is. I think that's his name. And as when I watched a review of this film by Chris Stuckman, he said it's just a powerful thing. Is a powerful quote is. You may not be saying that word, but you're surely acting like you're calling him. You're surely like treating him like that. And that's pretty powerful and needs to be heard. And it's and Zach Gottsagen does a really good job too. He's like the he's definitely every time he speaks, like basically if it was in a theater, all eyes would be on him in a good way. He every time he's on screen, it's just when he's not on screen, it makes me sad. It would make me the film wasn't as interesting to watch when he wasn't as on screen, and when it was Tyler or Shia LaBeouf and Zach Gottsagen were on screen, it was just a joy to watch them work together and have fun. And they legitimately looked like they were having fun together, and I think that's the heart of the film. And after that, I rewatched Parasite with my dad, and I didn't watch the whole thing, but from the parts I did watch, it's still as brilliant as I remember. Just seeing his reaction to everything, it's incredible. Such an incredible film. What a masterpiece that was. Just seeing his reaction was just the heart is the amazing part of the film. Just an amazing film, Parasite. Go watch it if you haven't. It's on Hulu right now. After that, I watched another wholesome, well, it's a lot more wholesome than Peanut Butter Falcon, but a very sweet, cute, wholesome, heartwarming film, Paddington 2. Oh my gosh, why didn't I watch this film in 2018? Oh, it's brilliant. It is just, like, everyone does a fantastic job and looks like they're having a fun time and just loving being a part of this film. Even Peter Capaldi, who is in a smaller role, he looked like he was having a good time. And Hugh Grant. Man, I love Hugh Grant. He did a really good job here. Ben Whishaw, he was in, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He was in Mary Poppins Returns. He did a really good job as a titular character. Sorry, I'm stuttering. It is a perfect, perfect film. Oh my gosh, it's brilliant. You need to watch Paddington, seriously. Y'all need to watch Paddington. And then the next film I watched was A Hidden Life. And definitely a change of pace from Paddington. But in a good way. This was a... Just since I have a short time, a sadder version of Hacksaw Ridge, if that gives you any idea. It's a lot less violent than Hacksaw Ridge. It's still just as inspiring to me. I haven't seen Hacksaw Ridge, but I know, kind of get an idea of what it's about. It's got some hard truths about it. It's a little political, but I don't mind what it's saying. It was, for me, particularly since I am a Christian, it was a very religious experience, and it was moving, and it was incredible, for real. If you are a Christian, this is a must watch. It's so sad. And it is so, again, as inspiring to watch. It really is something. And I didn't feel like, and it says it's 3 hours, I didn't feel like that. I enjoyed every second of it. And when the characters felt things, I felt things. Felt those things. And it's, again, it's just, it was a moving, grand, incredible experience to watch this film. All right, those were all the films I watched. If you want to see the full reviews of those films I have on them, they're on my Letterboxd, as I said before, that is in the description. Make sure to follow me there. And next, when we come back, I'm going to introduce my very special guest. Thank you. See you in a little bit. And we're back. I am here with Bradley Bliven. He is a theater major, if I'm correct, right here at Missouri Baptist University. Why don't you tell the listeners who you are, Bradley? Just introduce yourself.
Well, as you said, my name is Bradley Bliven, and I am a theater major. And I'm 26. I'm from Missouri. Mm-hmm. So, you know, background boy, I guess. But, that's kind of it, really. That's all I can think of that's, like, essential, I guess.
Gotcha. Well, you could just give us a little, like, things that, like, you love to, like, watch or listen to. This is an entertainment podcast which hosts my unfiltered, unscripted, genuine thoughts about stuff, and it's that extends to my guests, so don't be afraid to hold back.
Well, in that case, I suppose, I guess my favorite genre of film, or really any entertainment media, I guess, is fantasy, or like science fiction, I guess. I like when things kind of take you outside of your own world. So, you know, like I love the original Star Wars trilogy. I love Indiana Jones. I love Marvel movies. I do really enjoy most superhero stuff. Not all of it. Some of it's kind of, I guess, monotonous or sometimes it fails to kind of live up to the material it is adapting. But yeah, I mean, I like my favorite TV shows are stuff like Dinosaurs or The Muppet Show or Tales from the Crypt, you know, stuff like that. That's kind of, all of those have puppets. So I guess that's kind of a theme there. I love puppetry. Jim Henson is creatively one of my inspirations and heroes. I don't like the word idol, but
yeah,
I'll say heroes. And like him and Walt Disney and Roald Dahl, you know, Fred Rogers, those are all people who I think creatively are just like a volcano of inspiration. So much, you know, like overflowing from them. So and Stan Lee, I don't know why I didn't say his name, but Stan Lee, absolutely.
And I know that's not one of the topics, but how would you say they inspired you or like impacted you or like how you've taken inspiration in your own like life and like maybe even performance way you do perform, I guess.
Well,
that's the way I'm trying to say.
With, I mean, Jim Henson is just like, you know, the Muppets and what he has done with the Muppets as like a group, they're very much like the idea of theater family. You know, it's like everybody is kind of their own character and nobody's really like judged for that. But they all like, they're all so different and unique in their own individual ways. Not just like with personalities, but with like, you know, how they look too. But they all just blend together. And even though they look and act so differently when they come together, they just make beautiful things. And Jim Henson was very inspirational to me because he was very supportive of people's dreams. You know, he'd always, there's always something that like Kermit will say in like the Muppet Show or any of the movies where it's like kind of a follow your dreams kind of thing. And just like, they're never really like, I don't even know, apologetic, I guess, in how they act. They just be themselves. So that to me is something that's very inspiring and encouraging. There's a quote from the first Muppet movie towards the end when Kermit tells the antagonist, he says, "Well, I've got a dream too, but it's about singing and dancing and making people happy. That's the kind of dream that gets better the more people you share it with. And well, I've found a whole bunch of friends who have the same dream, and it kind of makes us like a family." And that, again, that's like, that's the theater family, like, you know, I guess, dream. But Kermit the Frog, especially, even though he's, you know, not a real person, but he's kind of an alter ego of Jim Henson. He's kind of, you know, the Spider-Man to Jim Henson's Peter Parker. And like, you know, Kermit in the first movie, the same Muppet movie from 1979 that the quote is from, he just, his whole goal in that movie is to, he wants to become rich and famous, but it's solely of the purpose of entertainment and making people happy. And that's kind of, I guess, the spark that I like to think drives me in my theater endeavors or acting endeavors, if you will. And then just Roald Dahl, author of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and James and the Giant Peach and Matilda. His imagination, like Jim Henson's, is so it's catchy. It's very contagious, and it's, I don't know, I look at those stories and those characters that he has created, and it's just, I don't know, it's exciting. It's like, ah, I want to tell stories. And there's another kind of quote from James and the Giant Peach that I kind of attribute to theater people, even though in James and the Giant Peach, it's about these like weird creatures that like make magic happen. But this mysterious man tells James there's more magic in them things than in the rest of the world put together. And I think that's very true about, in my experience, specifically theater artists, but that I feel like can attribute to any kind of artist across the board. And again, like Stan Lee, same creative genius. And with Fred Rogers, it's more connecting with your audience and letting them know that they're not alone. So, and that's something also Jim Henson handled really well.
Okay. So we've done with that. And, this is kind of out of the box, and it's going to get specific, but, and you're probably going to, you could say, I can't do this, I can't really answer this. Which one do you feel has played the biggest influence on your life out of those people you've mentioned?
Probably
made the biggest impact.
Probably Jim Henson. But I don't, because it's tough, because I mean, Peter Parker, you know, who Stan Lee created, that's the character of Spider-Man. That's a character that I relate to a lot. But I don't know. I guess I'd say it's kind of a tie between Jim Henson and Stan Lee. Because Jim Henson kind of kick-started the dream, I guess. And I guess the idea that you can help people and, you know, have and get paid sing and dance and kind of be goofy. but the whole Peter Parker Spider-Man dynamic is something that I feel I relate to, because it's, you know, when Peter Parker puts on the mask, he can do and say things that like Peter Parker can't. You know, it's kind of like being a character, you get to go on these adventures in these other worlds as a character that you couldn't do in real life. And Peter Parker himself, kind of once the mask is off and the costume's off, he's just kind of this normal guy who struggles with, you know, things like anxiety and overthinking. And that's something that I feel like a lot of people can relate to. But it's something that I certainly relate to. And he's just, I don't know, he's just a fascinating character, and he's very realistic, to me. And, you know, a lot of people would love to be Batman. I'd love to be Batman. I mean, I love my parents, so I'd prefer to not be Batman, even though Spider-Man is also an orphan. but he, I don't know, there's something more relatable about a broke college student who is constantly thinking about his problems than a guy who stays up all night on the computer and then goes out and solves crimes. Although I at least stay up all night on my computer, but I don't go out and solve crimes as much as I like to think I do.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people would like to be Batman because it comes with him being a playboy and or the right. money. The money
he's
is
got
a big
all
thing.
Toys, like I think the Jack Nicholson Joker says in the 89 Tim Burton Batman. So I'd love to have gadgets and gizmos and goobers like that.
So we're going to move on to the next thing. We're going to talk about your time at MoBap. You can be as honest as possible if you want to talk about people. Please don't mention names.
No, I'm pretty – I think I'm pretty stealthy at covering my tracks. And usually with my experience, I try to – I don't know. I don't want to, like, generalize or group people together, but there are, like, certain groups that have affected choices I've made, so.
Yeah.
But with MoBap – I don't know. It's I think it's something that, I mean, my time here has been so refreshing and uplifting in terms of theater and faith and even just as a human being. I was going to SIUE before I went to MOBAP, or before I transitioned to MOBAP. And the SIUE theater community, there were things I liked about it, things I didn't like about it. But ultimately, I felt like a fish out of water. I felt like I didn't belong. And there's kind of a number of things that attribute to that that I won't get into. But, you know, it's tough because you have to find your own place. And, you know, there are people that would fit in at SIUE that maybe wouldn't fit in at MOBAP. And mm-hmm. I was, you know, the opposite of that. But I kind of came to MOBAP on a whim. A friend had suggested going to MOBAP when she had heard that I was having problems at SIUE. And so I didn't really, like, look at any other schools. It was just kind of a, okay, I'll go to MOBAP. Like, I just picked up everything and went, like, not knowing, like, you know, mm-hmm. is this going to be the same? You know, is this going to be different? But, like, have some things be the same, like, things I didn't like. But, I mean, so far it's been great. I love everybody at the school. It very much is that kind of theater family, like I had talked about, like, that the Muppets are, where everybody is so distinct in their personalities, but also, you know, blend in and work very well with everybody else. And that's just such a beautiful thing. And so it feels like home.
Mm-hmm. So, like, I remember people describe the theater as, like, their second home. And do you feel like that's very true here? Like, your second home? Sometimes when you don't have a home to go to, you might come back to here.
I think, and this is just kind of my experience with, like, other, you know, theater experience as well. But it's just, it's, like, theater to me has always kind of been my home. I'd rather be... unless it's like one of those rehearsals where it's like exhaustingly like tired, that's kind of a monotonous word. But anyway, if it's like a rehearsal that's just, you know, you like you feel like the aches in your legs and you're kind of you're just so exhausted, you want to like go home and rest. Unless it's a rehearsal like that, theater has always felt like home to me. My dad played hockey in high school, and he'd always pass. We'd always like drive past the ice rink that he played at when he was in high school, and he was like, "You know, that place is like my home," and that's how I feel about the theater. It's I don't know. It's a place where you can really be yourself while also not being yourself, if that makes sense. The characters, you know, I've played. I don't know, really helped me to find me, and it just and just being around people who are, you know, have the same passions and goals as you, and love to tell stories as much as you do. There's a reason it's a theater family. It's because it feels like home. So for me, I'd rather be goofing off in the theater and, you know, working hard and creating a show than being at home and like kind of watching TV. So mm-hmm. theater has always kind of felt more like home to me than home itself.
Any specific like moments at MOBAP you're gonna be like, wow, that was like in a good way, like any specific moments at MOBAP or something along those lines that you'll remember for quite a bit? In a good way.
I mean, there's a lot. But, I mean, there have been certain interactions with people. I pretty much have a story for everybody there that has maybe been like, you know, this is awesome. I love this place. But, I mean, really, I'd have to say the the camaraderie that was shared during Music Man between our students and the community was really beautiful. And I mean, just the whole process of Into the Woods was very, I don't know. It wasn't like, I guess for me, eye-opening because I had been there for a while, but it was just so like, it was relaxing while also tasking at the same time, if that makes sense. It was, you know, it was, I mean, it was, it's a Sondheim show. So there was a lot of, I mean, pressure, but it didn't feel like pressure. It felt like teamwork, and it I think it paid off wonderfully, and just everybody involved in it was, it felt very accomplishing to do that show with that group of people.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think those two will be something that I hold on to for a very, very long time. But just, I mean, it wasn't even, I had hardly even like set foot in the theater when I was like, I mean, like the first day I got there in class, it was very like, yes, hello, welcome. Like, you are one of us now. Nobody like really, you know, like, it's not like people huddled in a group and like looked over their shoulder and was like, who was that guy? It was just like, yes, hello. I've been expecting you. Like, I've compared it to Harry Potter showing up at Hogwarts and people just being like, oh, hey, like, I know who you are. And I have, like, no idea of, like, anybody's names yet. And, like, but they're all, like, already on a first-name basis with me. So it was a very nice welcome. It was a very warm, loving welcome, which what more could you ask for?
Yeah. I mean, you could ask for, like, I don't know, like, a super close relationship with everybody, but I don't know. I don't think that rarely happens on, like, the first day. I think that's, like, unless people really, really like you, then,
well, I mean, people, I don't know. People were, like,
but,
I
mean,
as welcoming as you can possibly be, I feel. Like, you know, like, with a,
yeah,
a deep relationship with somebody, like a friend, you know, it takes place. You gotta, you know, have building blocks at that span of time. You gotta get comfortable with people. And I guess my defenses were honestly probably kind of up because I was going to this new school, and my school I had previously been to, I didn't feel like I belonged. So, you know, you're kind of going to have a deflector shield up for those Star Trek fans out there. That's probably not something they say in Star Trek. But anyway, but I mean, you know, again, people were so lovingly and welcoming. It's like the only thing they didn't do was like have a banquet or throw a parade for me. That's really kind of about it. But everybody was very loving.
Yeah. Do you have any funny stories that you have from your time at MoVap so far?
Yeah, I do. I have a couple. But I don't know how many I can really say because I don't want to. I mean, I don't want to name names, but I don't want to, I guess, have somebody be embarrassed of a story I said because of their association with the story.
I mean, can you, like, one of me, one funny story, if you have a funny story involving me, you can, I don't care, I'm free to be.
So I'm trying to think.
Oh, no!
Oh, no, I don't want to tell that one.
Is it one of the Music Man ones?
No, it was, oh gosh, this is going to sound so bad. It was when we all went to South Dakota, and I was like, I was filming. There's like that plaque in the hallway, or that like button thing in the hallway.
Oh,
that said like,
yeah. This room is oh boy,
people. And I was like filming it, and like right as I was filming it, you walked out of your hotel room that was right next to the sign, and I just moved my camera up, and you just looked in my camera and smiled. it was pretty bad, but it was just such good timing.
Wait, were you like, did you mean to do that, or did you like,
yeah, I kind of was waiting for it because I knew you were gonna come.
I see how it is.
Honestly, to be fair, I knew you were coming out, but honestly, if anybody else had come out that door, they would have been fallen victim to my wonderful cleverness of being rude to people on Snapchat.
But do you have like any like innocent wait, you kind of do. You have that one for Into the Woods.
Mufasa one. Okay, so we're doing Into the Woods rehearsals, and I'm pretty sure it was Tech Week. I don't think we were in dress rehearsal yet. But Neil, who played the narrator, was sitting on top of this platform that was a part of the set, and it was like a deck that was supposed to be at this top level. It was like Rapunzel's Tower, and you know, they had like a spiral staircase that came underneath it. And so he was sitting up there, and he had like his legs dangling off the side. And Greg, who played my dad in that show, The Mysterious Man, because I was the baker, spoiler alert for Into the Woods, he, again, spoiler alert, had died at the end of Act One. And so we're just kind of, getting through some tech stuff. There's a transformation in that scene. And so they were working that out. And Craig was laying there and he had died. And before that, he had like went up to Neil and like was talking to him as he was up on the platform. And I was just sitting there because Neil has like this fantastic baritone voice. And I think he'd be a fantastic Scar in the Lion King musical. And Greg wants to be Mufasa. He'd be a fantastic Mufasa. And so I was kind of like talking. I was just standing there watching them talk. And I was like, oh my gosh, like it's Scar and Mufasa. And then Greg dies in that scene. And I was like, that was kind of like the stampede scene. So we're working this transformation out. And I'm like reacting to Greg's death because we're going through the scene. And I'm like trying to, react appropriately. And so I start saying to Greg, like the lines that Simba says when Mufasa is dead after the stampede scene in Lion King. He's like, Dad, we got to go home. You got to get up. And the actress who played my wife just went, Bradley, no. And she was kind of upset. And Greg was like trying not to laugh. He was kind of like reacting himself. So it was a fun little scene.
You mentioned Jim Henson and like Stan Lee. Stan Lee, yes. When I hang around you, you tend to like when you post your stuff on your social media stuff around like sent around the 80s and like 90s and stuff like that. I remember you hung out with John one day and you were playing like Atari and Nintendo, the NES. So what's what's your like love for the 80s? Like how did that, or like the 80s and 90s are nostalgic properties to people who are like, or just nostalgic properties in general. What's your love for like the 80s and 90s and that time period? I feel like I'm being redundant by repeating myself.
I feel
like. But love,
I think how'd that start? Like I have an older brother who is born in 89, so you know a lot of that kind of came from him and just I mean for the 90s, you know, I was a kid, I was like a tiny baby, so it's for me, I guess it reminds you of a simpler time where you didn't have to worry about bills or you know like going to work and stuff like that, and it just I don't know, for me I think the 80s specifically, I grew up, I guess, watching a lot of 80s movies. And again, that might have been the influence of my brother. But, I just love, like, the pop culture of the 80s, like, the fashion of the 80s. And I'm not really somebody who's into fashion. But I love the music. Everybody loves 80s music in some way or another. But in terms of, like, movies and storytelling, that was, like, you know, when Spielberg was kind of on top of the world, and you know, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi came out, and Indiana Jones movies came out, Back to the Future came out, Goonies, Spielberg had a hand in most of those, But it just, I don't know. It's just, it would just seem like so creative. It just seemed like a very intriguing time for movies and storytelling. And I think a lot of that was because, you know, they were still doing practical effects and they were kind of figuring out CGI and like blue screen. It was blue screen back then, so green screen. And I don't know, just like the actors and everything. It was just kind of like a perfect storm because, like, I don't know, stuff like the first Ghostbusters was kind of like, I feel like, an accidental hit because Dan Aykroyd had like written like this giant script and they were like, okay, let's cut some of this out and we're going to try to make it work. And it did. And it just, I don't know. It's, I think everybody kind of has some sort of time period that they relate to. I mean, you know, there's people who say I was born in the wrong generation, and, you know, like some people might like the 60s and, like, you know, Beatlemania and like Woodstock and be into that. But I don't, the 80s just is something that sticks with me. And it really is because of like the movies that came out. Again, like I said, I love Goonies and Back to the Future and Gremlins and Ghostbusters. But a lot of it also, I think, has to do with, I'm like a huge Ninja Turtle fan. And that's when their comic came out in 1984 and their cartoon came out in 1987. So I think a lot of that has to do with Ninja Turtles and kind of being, you know, from that decade of the 80s is, you know, by association, liking things like the Goonies and Back to the Future. So yeah, it's just a time period that, like, I guess fits my aesthetic, I guess is the best way to say that.
Gotcha. And do you feel like there was like more freedom, or do you think it was like a more time, like a time where fun was like the objective, to try to make had the most fun when you come to creating a product that for audiences to, or consumers or customers to get, like, fun was like the main objective, I guess, or there was a lot more freedom back in that time?
I don't know much like politically about the 80s. But I know that, you know, consumerism was a big deal because shopping malls were opening up, and like kids were kind of being targeted more, like with the Saturday morning cartoons, like I talked about. They would literally produce shows like Ninja Turtles to sell children action figures. And I think, you know, the 70s was kind of a gray period in time where it was kind of, things were difficult. Like, they had the Vietnam War and like gas prices were like crazy. And just like, if you ever watch the movie Miracle on Ice, I guess that, like, they have a like timeline in the opening credits, or the movie's called Miracle, but it's about Miracle on Ice. It has a pretty good like timeline of like what was going on in the 70s. Like, there's, I guess, a lot of controversy and political things that were happening. I'm not much of a historian, but
Cold War was going on, but
I mean,
yeah,
it was more than that. The country itself, like America itself, was having, you know, problems within itself. I know there were a lot of women's rights movements going on, and, you know, things were kind of becoming more progressive, but not a whole lot. But I mean, like the 80s, you know, you have Michael Jackson was like big, and I feel like there were more female groups than usual. But again, I can't say for sure because I haven't done any research, but this is just from, I guess, my speculation of what I know of the 80s. It just kind of seemed like the 70s was, again, this like kind of like weird time. And then, you know, Jaws comes out in 75, Star Wars comes out in 77, and then Superman comes out in 79. And I think in terms of like movies, those three really popped things open, and they were like, okay, let's be more creative. And again, I know that they were kind of targeting kids more with Saturday morning cartoons and breakfast cereals and stuff like that. And it just kind of like, it's, I guess like the 80s was kind of like the decade of the teenager, especially with movies. Because, you know, you have like Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Marty McFly and Back to the Future, The Goonies, Gremlins, all these movies kind of like were about teenagers for the first time really since like the 50s. Because, you know, in like 50s B movies, like all the heroes were, you know, like Steve McQueen, like in The Blob, and just I can't think of who the main guy is or the actor, but, you know, there's I Was a Teenage Werewolf. There's a lot of like movies in the 50s that were kind of targeted more towards teenagers. And I think that's how the 80s certainly was. They targeted teenagers because, you know, those were the people who were mostly in shopping malls. So, but yeah, I think there was a lot of fun to be had in the 80s for most people. Can't say for everybody, but as far as I know.
Yeah. Speaking of movies, we're going to be talking about that for a little bit. What would you say is your favorite film or movie of 2019? And tell me why, or tell the listeners as to why.
Off the top of my head, I'd say Endgame. And I know that's kind of, I guess, cliche for me, because I like the Marvel movies, but I'm not just somebody who, you know, blindly follows a franchise. But it certainly was, I guess, Endgame for me because, you know, I had seen the first Iron Man movie when it came out in theaters, like on opening night, when I was in eighth grade. And so it was like the end of an era for me. And, you know, I was here mm-hmm. I am like at like 25 in college watching, you know, this whole like arc wrap up. And it was crazy. And it was like, I remember like watching that movie and just like crying because it was like, holy cow, we've come so far. And you know, I mean, going from middle school to your mid 20s, watching these characters in these movies and growing close to these characters. It was an emotional, fun journey. So I'd have to say Endgame. I also liked Spider-Man Far From Home. That kind of had to grow on me. I watched that and I was kind of like, this doesn't really feel like a Spider-Man movie, but it eventually I was kind of like, you know what? This is like a classic Stan Lee, Steve Ditko Spider-Man adventure. I really liked Rocket Man because Elton John is like my favorite singer-songwriter. His songs are very, I guess, again, nostalgic to me for a time I never lived in, which is interesting. His songs are very, like, I don't know, they're very poetic, but they're very, like, specifically, like, American poetic, even though he's British. I don't know, it just makes me think of, I guess, like, when my parents were in high school in, like, the 70s, I guess, you know, it's kind of like going back in time and being there when like my parents were, you know, younger. And that's kind of how Back to the Future came up, but that's a different story. And I don't know, his songs are just, they just speak to me poetically. And they, you know, they're easy for me to sing. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I also, I guess this would be like the last one I could think of. I don't think I saw this in 2019, but I really enjoyed 1917. It was very, like, you know, character focused. It had subverted my expectations. There were things that happened that I like that were the complete opposite of what I was guessing would happen. It was a nice adventure film. And it kind of like drops you in and you're kind of like, wait, what's going on? And then it's pretty simple. Like, you know, they basically say, go here. And they go, okay. So then they go there.
Yeah.
And it's a treacherous journey, but it was very, very, captivating, without you know, having to be too reliant on special effects, or, you know, I mean, it's filmed as if it's one long tracking shot. So it's, you know, there's not a lot of like quick cuts. And it, I don't know, it was just a fun movie. It certainly toys with your emotions, but I mean, that's what a good story should do. So.
Yeah. All those films you mentioned are really good. Avengers Endgame, definitely. I felt that same experience. I didn't watch Iron Man in theaters, but my mom and dad brought it home, and I've kind of watched every film and movie since then.
Iron Man, all like on opening night, every single one. So, yeah,
Became like a tradition for you.
There's like basically joking memes about like, you know. I hope I don't die because I got to find out how the next Marvel movie, like what happens in the next Marvel movie. And that's kind of something I relate to. It's like, I hope nothing bad happens to me because I got to see Black Widow. I got to know what happens. So.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned Spider-Man Far From Home. For me, I really liked it. I was liking it. And then when I got out of it, I'm like, and that was okay. And then I remembered the ending, the post-credit scene. And I think that's what really draws you in. And that's what keeps audiences, that's the part that blew audiences away for sure, was the ending and the post-credit scene.
Little, cameo down there in that first little mid-credit scene. That was, everybody like was going crazy for that. And I was like, all right, I was excited for that. I'm very excited for the next Spider-Man movie. Whenever that will be.
Whenever it comes out. Funny for
me about Spider-Man Far From Home, I'm sorry if I'm interjecting, but it's like Mysterio is my favorite Spider-Man villain, and I felt like they did a very good job with him. But I think what like kind of like made it feel weird for me was that, like, and it's in the title, like the setting, it's not New York, and I was kind of like, that's kind of weird. But like in early Spider-Man comics, like the first time he fights the Green Goblin, he goes to like New Mexico. And then he fights the Lizard in Florida. Like, he goes all over the place, but then they kind of condense it more to New York. So I'm hoping the third one will take place in New York.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned Rocket Man. And what a performance by Taron Egerton. Oh, my gosh. I'm a bit upset that he was really snubbed. I know you don't care about the Oscars, but
he did a fantastic job. And what I loved about... like it's kind of almost like not the movie, but like if you watch like him with Elton John, it's like Elton John like looks at, he like just beams every time like he sees Elton like singing or sings Taron singing one of his songs. He's just like a proud like older brother. It's a very sweet relationship the two of them have.
Mm-hmm. And just definitely was a story I think a lot of people can relate to, and everybody it was about like wanting to be loved and worrying about being a one trick pony, because he's like the one scene before he sings Rocket Man. He says, for my next trick, I'm going to effing kill myself.
What I think kind of sets Rocket Man apart from other biopic movies. And I might be wrong about this, but this is the one I've seen that like at the end, it wasn't like, look at me, I'm cool. Like, you know, I overcame my problems. It came off more to me as like, it's okay to get help. Like people, like if you need help, you can like get help. You don't have to be ashamed of it. And that whole like goodbye Yellow Brick Road scene where he's in his orange devil costume and he literally like walks away from a concert that he's about to do or whatever. He was doing something. I can't really see Elton John walking away from a concert going Elton John, but because he loves his fans very much. But he, you know, he just gets in a cab and is like, take me to rehab, and he kicks his habits. And there's like, and Bernie forgiving it. It's just a beautiful story. And, you know, I just love that it was like, even, you know, singer, songwriter, like billionaires need to get help. Don't be afraid to get help.
Mm-hmm. And then finally 1917. I believe that's my fifth top film of 2019. That is just, it's an incredible war. I think it's my favorite war movie I've ever seen. Roger Deakins, the cinematographer who did the help with the one shot, he just helped with the beautiful film, like the beautiful filming, and the it's just an incredible experience. And with the cinematography, you do feel like you're the third
Sure.
man. And George, I think his name, or George McKay, my bad. He gives an incredible performance as well, and it just it shows like just even little pieces of it shows the horrors of war. But what I find so amazing about it, even though it's like this really big epic thing, I the moments I remember the most is are the quiet moments when it's like this when I'm a poor wayfaring
Yeah.
stranger comes up, or when he's singing to the baby. It's just the little things that make this an incredible journey. And yeah, I can understand
Yeah.
why
Another thing I
really
really
enjoyed
enjoyed about
that.
that movie is that like the actors playing, like the main protagonists are kind of they're people I had never seen before in anything else. But then they have like, I guess this might be a little spoiler, but like the big name actors who are in that movie are like kind of cameo roles, and so you're kind of like, oh, like it's and it's almost like meeting like a long lost friend, but it's like, you're like, oh, of course, like this person is important. They're kind of, the goal, reaching this person is the goal of the story, and they're played by somebody who is, a celebrity. Or is, more familiar to me than these other actors. So if that makes kind of sense, it's kind of like, of course, like this person is playing this general, there's kind of that association of like a big name with an important person, like a general in an army that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, it's like I again adding to that, like the two main leads are actors
Yeah.
generally like American audiences or audiences aren't really familiar with. And it's also like a bunch of extras. So it's like back then, even though it's this is a kind of morbid statement, but it's like they're
Expendables,
like kind of
yeah.
faceless. They're kind of just there. And yeah, so it's like so it kind of I felt like I'm glad that
Right.
they went with actors who aren't really well known fill these roles, and hopefully both of them get a boost
Yeah,
in their career after
absolutely.
this amazing film. The next thing we're going to talk about an upcoming A24 film, if it ever gets released, is the Scottish play or The Tragedy of Macbeth. It's directed by one of the Coen brothers, who did, I believe. Let me go ahead and look.
Yeah.
They did The Big
That
Lebowski. They
movie
did
rocks.
Raising Arizona. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? The Country for Old Men. True Grit, and The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and Inside Llewyn Davis, Joel Coen, and it's basically another version of Macbeth from William Shakespeare. And
Ooh.
Denzel Washington is playing the title role. Frances McDormand, who is playing Lady Macbeth. Brendan Gleeson, if you
I
probably
see
recognize his
nothing.
face, he's like very bearded. He's like a big bearded dude. Playing, yeah, he's playing Duncan, and then some more. And it's from what I can tell, it's just going to be an independent version of the Macbeth. And I just want you to put your opinion on that and what you think of how it's going to be in the product of that. Are you excited for it, or just your ideas, just based on those three people and the people that are behind it? How do you think it's going to fare
Well,
in
I mean,
the pr end
if I'm being
product,
completely
basically?
honest, Coen Brothers stuff is kind of like hit or miss for me. Like, I really, really, really enjoy Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? But, like, I don't know, like Big Lebowski, and this is, I guess, really controversial to say. It didn't like resonate with me. Like my brother loves it, but I don't know. It didn't like hit with me, I guess, or connect with me very well. I mean, there are parts of it I think is funny. It certainly is a quotable movie, but. And like Jeff Bridges is as iconic as the dude, but I mean I really enjoyed True Grit, and I love Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? I think a big part of that enjoyment for me of that film in particular is the soundtrack and like the kind of bluegrass music that puts things in the setting. I think, I don't know, it'd be interesting because they always have like a very specific idea and take on things. A lot of their stuff seems to kind of be like, I guess in my mind, like Western or like Southern, when I think about, you know, True Grit, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, the ballad of is it Buster Scruggs? I watched like parts of that.
Yeah, Buster Scruggs, an anthology Western film.
A theme with that. So I don't, I mean, I don't know if where the setting is going to be, if it's going to be in Scotland or if it's going to be in, you know, Texas or whatever, but I think the cast, I mean, Denzel Washington is Macbeth, like that's already super intriguing to me. And I hope it gets released because I'd like to see it. And I know Brendan Gleeson is in Troy as King Agamemnon's brother. That's what I know him from. But it just, yeah. Who'd you say was playing Lady Macbeth?
Frances McDormand. She played the main cop in Fargo, and okay. She was also the main character in Three Billboards Out of Ebbing, Missouri.
I know her from Fargo, which I've only seen a little bit of. But I think, again, I mean, like, already, Denzel, you know, he's fantastic, so that's, I think that's going to be a very interesting piece of art, and I'm intrigued to see it.
And A24 for general audiences, or like when people are seeing it, it's kind of like hit or miss. I personally have loved everything they've done, but they like that. The people, like, I'm in a Facebook group, they say that it has A24 vibes.
Yeah,
they usually have a certain feeling to their films, and even though they don't make anything, they've only made like five. They made Moonlight and something else, I think. But they definitely do have a certain like feeling. They're all generally like slow, kind of slow movies, depending. Sometimes they get fast, but generally they're more on the slow side. And we're going to continue with the movie. This is probably going to be our last movie topic is... more movies are starting to move to, since of COVID-19, movies are starting to move to video on demand. And my question to you is, how do you think this is going to impact theaters? Do you think this is going to shut them down because they're moving to on demand and streaming services? Or do you think, somebody pointed out, they survived the Great Depression.
To be fair, in the Great Depression, we didn't have
five
streaming services, didn't even have TV. I had radio, and that was kind of it. But I think... it's hard to say because anything can happen, but I think it's a very, I think it's just a kind of a temporary thing, hopefully. Cause I mean, I certainly enjoy going to the movies, but sometimes you go see a movie in the theater and you're kind of like, you know, I could have watched this at home or I could have waited for this, there are movies that I watch at home that I'm like, I wish I saw this in a theater. I don't know. There's to me, going to a theater is like the best experience for watching a movie because, you know, you don't have, distractions like your cell phone. And I mean, well, you shouldn't, if you go to the movie theater and you get on your cell phone, shame on you, but it's just the atmosphere that theaters bring. I like to think of theaters, and this is a really dorky thing to say, but they're kind of like teleportation rooms, if you will, or time machines, because you know, you go in there, and I mean, this goes for you know, like stage, you know, performances as well, not just screens and movie theaters, but it's you know, you get in that chair and it's kind of like, you know, being teleported to another dimension and you're watching these things happen before you. And it's such a cool thing. I have like a list of movies I want to see in a theater. I've gotten most of them. I haven't seen the original Star Wars trilogy in theaters, which I would very much like to do. But Yeah, that's. I mean, I. So I think it's gonna be temporary, but I still think some movies or some companies might, you know, say, okay, let's put this on demand. Like if it's a kids movie, maybe they'll say, let's put this on demand and let's put this, you know, like adventure movie that's kind of PG-13, like in theaters, because teenagers will go see that and teenagers want to get out of the house. Somebody said, I think it was Mike Stoklasa on Red Letter Media. Yeah. He said, I think it was him. He said that like, he thinks theaters are now going to be kind of bougier than they are. Like it's going to be, you know, you go to a theater and you're going to pay this money and you're going to get, you know, like your drink. You know, kind of like they already have theaters in our area. They have like the recliner seats. They might get a little bit more, you know, classier than that somehow. And it's, you know, it's going to be like the thing that like kind of artsy people do, I guess, for lack of a better term. I used artsy people, but like it's, you know, it's going to kind of become a, I guess, a classier thing. Or people suspect. I don't think it should. I mean, I would like to go see a movie, you know, and have it be classy. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's why like I love like when theaters kind of do $5 Tuesday stuff, because it's, you know, people can go see a movie without really having to worry about price. Because, you know, usually they're like $15. So it's, I mean, but I understand, because, you know, if it's like on demand and it's like $20, you know, you're not paying for every butt that's sitting in a seat, you know, so it's not like you have to pay $15 for every single person in your group. It's just $20 for the, you know, for the movie. And then you can invite all your friends over and have a movie night, which I think, you know, that's also really fun. But I mean, really, it can go either way, and I think it'll pretty much do that.
Yeah,
I, you know, certainly would hate to think of theaters and movie theaters as a dying social event, if you will. But I certainly hope they stick around, because they're fun. It's fun to do, and it's, again, it's like a group activity you can do, or, you know, if you just like especially in quarantine. You know, I'm tired of being at home when I feel comfortable going out after this, God willing, this thing goes away. You know, I'm going to a movie theater. But yeah, so an escape, because that's what it's all about. It's escape from your house.
Yeah.
Escape from your, you know, personal problems and thoughts, and adventuring with characters you maybe have never seen before or are seeing for like the 10th time on the screen. So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that brings up an interesting argument. I mean, it brings up, like, people used to say all the time, like before this all happened, people would say, like, I just wish I could watch a new movie inside my own home. And that kind of provides an opportunity with, like, as you brought up, right, like, watch it for $20 and you can invite a bunch of friends and it doesn't matter at a flat price. And then another movie that performed really, really well for on demand was Trolls World Tour. Jeez. Came out and made $100 million the first 20 days, from what I heard. I'm like, it made like 20 million the first, or like 40 million, right, or a pretty big number in the first weekend. And then it's made $100 million right now. So if studios look toward that, that may impact it a little bit. But then you also bring up the point that people want to get out of the house. I think there'll be when theaters come back, I think people will be like, man, I haven't seen a movie in the theater in a long time, and think they'll be itching for that.
Yeah.
I think it will be more like a time
specifically made so much type of because situation. It's a family movie, you know, you don't like, you can just sit your kids down in their pajamas. You don't have to take them anywhere. You know, it's just, you sit them down in front of the television and have a nice family night at home. Where, again, as I said, like, I think teenagers, I mean, you know, from personal experience, teenagers, you know, want to get out of the house and want to go see a movie with their friends. And, you know, because feeling that kind of sense of, you know, being independent and not necessarily rebellious, but, you know, wanting to get out on their own with their own group of people that they know. So I think movie theaters will be okay. They'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I freaking like.
And also, like, drive-ins are kind of making a comeback.
The last time I went to a drive-in was like, I think in 2010. But I mean, to me, that's like 2 weeks ago. Like in terms of memory, but we went to go see District 9 and The Hangover. I love going to the drive-in. It's weird because it's like I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, oh my gosh, I love doing that. And then when you get there, it's like not so great. And you're kind of like, what? Why did I do this? But it's been a while, so I don't really know. But yeah, I think a drive-in experience is great. Because, I mean, at least with that, if you want to goof off, you're at least goofing off in your own car. And, like, you know, you're not distracting other people who are trying to watch the movie that, like, aren't in your group. So, you know, if you want to, like, get on your phone or, like, you know, mm-hmm. punch your friend in the face or whatever, like, you don't have to. I mean, well, it's a drive-in. You might see a slug bug. I don't know. So, you know, just goof around all you want.
True.
And, you know, people don't have to go tell ushers to come in and yell at you. So.
Mm-hmm.
How do you kick somebody out of a drive-in? Do you get a tow truck and just rip them out?
Or make you leave. Sir, you've been too distracted by just messing around in your car. You need to leave.
Get a tow truck.
Speaking of theaters, why do you personally love theater, and what impact has it been on your life?
Kind of something to look forward to, you know, like, because again, I mean, at this point in my life, it's not a career, it's ideally the career I will have, and so, you know, if you know you're working like a kind of part-time or full-time job somewhere else, you know, it's, and that kind of can take a toll on you getting up working 9 to 5 or whatever. It's, you know, it's kind of, I've compared it before to, it's kind of like you go to work and, I mean, depending on where you work, you know, you're just kind of like another face in the crowd, but then you go to do a show or go to rehearsal. And, you know, everybody's like, yes, there's our friend who's, you know, a part of our troupe. He's one of our family members. It's, again, a Harry Potter allegory. It's kind of like going from the Dursleys to going to Hogwarts. And I mean, for me, it certainly is a sense of belonging and a sense of accomplishment, even just, you know, being a part of something, telling a story, knowing how much I love hearing stories and, you know, then getting to tell them and be on the other side of that. And, you know, hopefully distract people for a little bit from their problems or make them reflect on how they can face their problems and hopefully inspire or uplift them in some kind of way. That's because, I mean, again, that's kind of what, to me, theater is about, is helping mm-hmm. your fellow man through storytelling. And I mean, people have been doing that like for the longest time in history. So, hopefully, yeah. I think that's kind of the impact. Hopefully, I guess, I don't know. My goal is that, you know, to replicate on somebody else the impact that theater has had on me. Whether that's just, you know, by me playing a character or being a part of a show, mm-hmm. you know, that has a story that really resonates with somebody. That's kind of the impact theater's had on my life. And that's why I love doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this is going to go into a bit of a story time for you. What is your favorite play and musical you've ever done in your theater career up to this point?
I gotta think about musicals. That's like that's an easy question, but plays. It's I'm kind of like oh geez, because I feel like the only like straight plays I've done are Shakespeare. Which I mean, of course, there's nothing wrong with. There's a reason so many people do it. I think for me, I mean, I guess the two plays that come to mind, Taming of the Shrew was the first Shakespeare play I did, and I was Tranio in that. And I think that one sticks with me just because it was the first time I had done Shakespeare, and it was, you know, it was like the scary behemoth, you know, type of play. It's like all this, you know, ye old English and like just monologue after monologue, just Tranio. I mean, that's usually how a lot of Shakespeare plays are written. Or at least it seems like they're long because I love the way they're written and, you know, the verses they're written in. But Tranio, in the story, pretends to be his buddy Licentio so they can trick people into it's so crazy trick people into letting Licentio get this girl he's in love with her hand in marriage while Licentio pretends to be an English tutor. So if you've ever seen the movie 10 Things I Hate About You with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Heath Ledger and oh shoot, what's her name? Julia Stiles? Is that it? I better look it up. It's that, but not, you know,
yes.
Early 2000s rom-com. It's Shakespearean. but so, anywho, Tranio is, you know, trying to compete with like these other suitors that want to marry Bianca, the girl that Licentio's in love with. So he just has to like outdo and like top everything they say. So he's got to be like, oh, I've got like, you know, like 50 horses and like stuff like that. So that was crazy. But then I was also, I was Creon in Antigone, which is a Greek tragedy. So that's like, you know, going back even further. And that show, it was kind of emotionally taxing because it's a Greek tragedy. And I guess this is a very debatable thing to say, but like, I don't know, the show is called Antigone and people consider her the protagonist. And that's fair to say. There's kind of two protagonists and it's kind of like, there's just two different sides. And I guess you could say that with every story. But I played Creon, who's the king, who people would kind of label the antagonist, and maybe it's just because I was playing him, but to me, he was kind of the protagonist. Not that there really was an antagonist. Again, I think there was two protagonists for that show. But he was on stage the most, and you kind of like spend the most time with him because of that and like hear what he has to say a lot because he's the king. And I don't know. I think it's easy to like think of him as like an oppressor because he's of what he's doing. If you know the show, he is this new king of Thebes. He's the brother-in-law of Oedipus, and Antigone, the titular character, is his niece, and she breaks this newly established law that he has placed in the country. And so he kind of tries to like take things into his own hands, and it doesn't really go well for anybody. And so it was just kind of, I don't know, depressing. But it was, there was also, I mean, as that character, so many monologues, because, you know, he has to make sure that people know he's the king. So he has like these giant kingly monologues about law and order and stuff like that. It's, you know, a bunch of like Greek god names, and not even like just, like, Greek people names. It's like, holy cow. But so those two plays, for sure. And then my three favorite musicals I've done are Aladdin, Little Mermaid, and Into the Woods. In Aladdin, I was Aladdin, and that was like the first time I got to be a leading man. So that was, you know, really cool because I relate to the character of Aladdin, how people kind of think he's one thing, you know. I mean, he kind of has it worse than me. People think he's like a, you know, a street rat and a thief. And they just kind of label him, but they don't really try to understand him. But deep down, he's, you know, the diamond in the rough. And so, why, you know, I wouldn't go far as to say I'm the diamond in the rough, but I think people can mislabel me. And so that was the whole reason I love Aladdin. And he has a lot of like fun scenes with the genie and with Jasmine, and he's very, you know, energetic and animated. He runs around a lot like in the movie, so I was trying to emulate that when I was playing him. And then in Little Mermaid, I was Prince Eric. And I mean, you know, who wouldn't want to play a Disney prince or a Disney princess and be like, yeah, I'm pretty cool. And kind of feel attractive. It was nice being, you know, kind of this character that this other character goes through so much to be with. And it makes you feel wanted. And he's got two great solos in that show that aren't in the movie, where he's singing about this voice he heard, you know, when Ariel rescues him from like his ship catching on fire, crashing, or when he falls overboard. And then he's got this song called One Step Closer when he teaches Ariel to dance because she has new feet and she's, you know, a mermaid, so she doesn't know how to walk, and he teaches her how to dance. It's really cute. And then he's in, there's this quartet, which is like the best number in the whole show, in my opinion. At least it's new to that show, with Ariel, Prince Eric, Sebastian, and King Triton, and it's fantastic. And I mean, yeah, and I mean, it being in Kiss the Girl was like, you know, that was awesome. It's like a whole new world. Oh, it's always fun to be like in iconic Disney scenes like that. And then in Into the Woods, the Baker, I think, has been my favorite character I've played so far throughout my career, because he's just this guy who's doing his best, and maybe he's not, you know, doing everything the way he should be doing things, and he's making mistakes along the way that have serious consequences later. But he's just kind of the everyman, and he's again kind of that like unexpected hero of the show. You know, you'd expect the prince to be the one who's gonna save everybody, but it's this Baker character who people hardly know he's a baker half the time. They think he's a hunter, and they think he's a butcher at other times. And again, a lot of that is the reason I love this show. And I love, you know, the other two shows, I love the casts in those shows. You know, I have a lot of great memories with people. But this one especially, I think, came at a certain time in my life when I needed it to. The cast, you know, certainly helped make it a memorable show and a fantastic show at that. And just, you know, the chemistry I had with the actors and actresses playing, you know, my wife, the witch, and, you know, the mysterious man, and Jack. It was just a little rewarding. Like, I got to interact with so many people in that show, and that was one of the great things about it. Is I remember, like, reading the script and being like, oh my gosh, I think I don't, like, interact with maybe, like, two people, but I get to interact with so many people. And the Baker doesn't, like, sing a whole lot, so I didn't have to really worry about that pressure. But it was just such a blast to do. And then it was emotionally rewarding, taxing, but rewarding. And so, yeah, I'd have to say those are my favorites. Mm-hmm. Well,
on that note, what do you think your future holds?
This summer I was going to audition for something that was kind of promising, career-wise, at least, you know, kind of the first little footsteps of something to put on a resume that will hopefully get attention. But, you know, the coronavirus happened, and so, you know, other plans had to be made. And I've recently been getting kind of like jobs from an old theater teacher of mine, and I've luckily got, like, it's so awesome because I've been getting paid for these. And it's just kind of like setting up your iPhone and goofing off in front of it, putting on costumes and stuff, and you get paid for it. And so I did, you know, two Shakespeare monologues. I did Hamlet as Michael J. Fox, and I did a Macbeth monologue as Michael Caine. And now I'm doing something else with this little, like, online, you know, quarantine theater company. And so I hopefully am getting a lot of networking from this. Because he's a professional actor in St. Louis, and he also teaches, and you know, people have been very complimentary of my Shakespeare monologues. So I hope that, you know, again, networking is happening, and I can, you know, be more recognizable, at least in auditions, and, you know, just little tiny baby steps. And I hope that, you know, things will open up for me wider. I certainly have the itch, I guess, to audition more within the city. You know, there's an old saying, hope for the best, expect the worst. And so I guess that's kind of my outlook. But I'm still pretty optimistic about it. I mean, there's no reason not to be. So
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. God willing, something good. A lot of great memories.
What do you think your future holds at MOBAP?
I mean, this upcoming season with Clue and Big Fish and Hunchback. I mean, those are the big three that come to mind. I think there's a couple more shows that we're doing. But those three that I named, I love all three of those.
Guard of Carnage and student directed show.
To be, you know, in a cast, regardless of what part alone, is something that I think would be immeasurable in wealth, just because of memories and you know, experience you get from doing shows. I hope for good things. I mean, really, that's all you can hope for is making good memories and having good times when you're doing a show. And of course, entertaining people who need it and people who are going to hear things that they need to hear through each show. So, and hopefully bring God glory through it, because that's why I go to MOBAP and do it. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Well, I think that's everything. Thank you so much, Bradley, for joining me. Please follow him. Please follow him in all the social networks. And thank you so much for joining us.